Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1092. It's Thursday, the 14th of June, 2018. Have you got the app? I'm nagging you all this week and the next couple of weeks to get the app. I realize a lot of people listen to the podcast that may not have the app and don't know the advantages of having the app. First and foremost, advantage one, it's free. Advantage two, it's priceless. Advantage free. It's a good slip up there. And listen, just go to voxmarkets.co.uk/app. Give it a try. Like I said, it doesn't cost you anything. Go on there, so register, of course. All you need is a name and an email address, and then follow a company. So any company you own or you like, you want to do research on, just follow. Just search for it by ticker or by name, then hit the follow button on it. That means whenever they release anything significant, it'll be delivered to the front screen of your smartphone, okay, via notification. You just swipe, open, read, share. And it's that simple. And literally, I've seen companies release news, okay, good news, and then I've read it, and I could have logged into my stockbroker account, bought some stock, and wait for the rest of the market to catch up. That's how fast they delivered, within seconds. And so try it out, voxmarkets.co.uk/app, download it, name, email address, follow a company you want news on, and when they release that, you'll get that straight to the front screen. Okay. On today's podcast, I have Rob Proctor, CEO of Audio Boom. Ticker there is Boom, of course, B-O-O-M. And Rob discusses the reasons for their withdrawal from their recent acquisition of Triton, and also discusses developments involving Spotify and Formula One. I also have on the podcast Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. And Chris talks about dividends and the threat of them being cut, essentially, in Royal Dutch Shell, BT, and Sky. We also talk about results at Rolls-Royce, PZ Cousins, and Majestic Wine. Plus, I also have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs, too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Rob Proctor, CEO of Audio Boom. That's B-O-O-M, Boom ticker. Rob, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. Hope you're well.
Yes. Well, listen, it's been a sort of a busy few months for you, and some things haven't gone to plan or didn't go to plan, so we can explain that, and you did a lot of stuff going on, so we explain all that as well. Before we do, if anyone's brand new to the podcast, Rob, or not familiar with the company, explain Audio Boom to them. What do you do?
So we're a tech platform that allows podcasters and audio on-demand makers to create, upload, store, and then distribute, broadcast, and monetize that content. In essence, as a company, we make content, we sell advertising. That's what we do.
Okay, marvellous. So news, on the 27th of April, you announced the proposed acquisition of Triton, a company, and then all of a sudden you've withdrawn from that. So on the 15th of May, so what happened? So first of all, why did you want to do it, and why didn't it work out?
Yeah, so I mean, we I've known the management team and the company of Triton probably for 4 or 5 years. We looked at it a few years ago and ultimately decided not to move forward with it. But certain members of the board wanted to look at it again about a year ago, which they did. And then there was a board decision to move forward and try and do an acquisition, which would have ended up being a reverse, mm-hmm. For Triton. I think the two businesses could have worked well together. They complemented each other, one on the content and media sales side, the other obviously on the analytics and the ad serving side. So, you know, things that we use as a company, and obviously the things we make as a company, the guys at Triton would have served and ad served against that. So, you know, logical reasons for putting them together. I think ultimately the decision was taken to move forward by the board. We obviously brought on board Zeus and Cenkos, as well as our, you know, great regular brokers at Allenby, who have always done a great job with us. We test marketed the potential opportunity with a number of institutions in London. Myself and Neil Shaw went and did those presentations, the CEO of Triton. All seven said they would invest, and they all put a number against that. Upon rebuilding a presentation, which was done by the brokers and the guys at Triton, and then the management team of Triton only went out and presented that, my services weren't required for that particular sojourn to the market. Only one of those seven test marketing companies actually stood by what they said, and I won't mention who they are, but they stood by what they did. The other six at that point decided not to invest. The opportunity was put in front of 125 different institutions on both sides of the pond. And ultimately, the vast majority of those decided they didn't want to move forward with it. So we weren't able to raise the required funds, unfortunately, to get the job done. You know, I suppose 100-odd institutions, rather like other members of the board that potentially didn't buy into it quite so heavily, decided that it wasn't a good deal. So, yeah, you know, it didn't move forward for that purpose, and there we are.
Okay, all right. So, in Expert News, I mean, is it you're going to raise some money and 4.5 million? So, what's this to do then, Rob?
Well, the raise actually, truth be told, was 6 million. So, we also had a million as a loan note from Candy Ventures previously, and then 500,000 converting into the round to make the round itself 5 million. Mm-hmm. All of the money raised is about growth for us at this point. We know our model. We know what works. We know what our sell-through rates are. We know what the audiences are. We know what the CPMs are. So our forecasting is now super accurate, has been for the last year. You know, at the point we, you know, entered, or the board entered into the transaction with Triton, we were on target to beat market expectations and EBITDA for the year. We should be cash flow positive right now at this second. Obviously, there was, you know, a little turmoil through that transaction. Obviously, £1.6 million worth of deal costs, which came out of Audio Boom's cash flow, which, again, with our model where we bring podcasters on, pay up front some minimum guarantees, and we reclaim that money ahead of the revenue share, we didn't have that cash flow in order to pay those minimum guarantees and bring those podcasters on. So, you know, it dented the overall operations of the business. We're in the process of rebuilding those now. But even given all of that turmoil, you know, as you see in the note from Allenby, or the note that will be on general release as soon as we come out of suspension, which hopefully will only be a few more days at this point, we're working hard to make that happen. You know, we're still on course for 100% growth this year in the podcast market that is due to grow, according to the IAB, 28% this year. We're looking at 100% growth. So even with what's happened, we're outperforming our market 4-1. So all good. So the money that's coming in now, really, it's focused on two areas. One is to bring those top podcasters onto the platform. So we've already lined up a number, as you know, the senior management at Audio Boom felt that the Triton deal wasn't going to get executed. We were already executing a plan B in the background. So we have a number of tier one podcasts ready to come on. They will get actioned over the next 4 weeks, which will give us our pickup in Q4, put us back where we would have been, you know, if we'd not been knocked back for the last 5 to 6 months. And then really the main focus for us is on our own content creation. So you would have seen, anybody that follows Audioboom closely would have seen Mafia and Covert, who are working with another company called World Media Rights. Mm-hmm. They make programming for Discovery and History Channel. Covert and Mafia are our first two shows with them. They have enough back catalogue to create 8 podcast series a year for the next 5 years on the spin. That's going to get rolled out now. We have new shows launching with A&E Networks, who are obviously one of America's largest TV companies. They own History and Discovery, and they make things like Ice Road Truckers and various other programs. So we've launched our first 2 programs with them, which is PD Stories and a Marsha Clark series. We have another 11 shows to launch with them over the next 7 or 8 months. Then we have another few huge podcasts coming out. I think this show is going out after we've resubmitted and launched the RNSs, so I could probably, you know, talk to some of them. Things like Formula One and the official podcast. Mm-hmm. There'll be an announcement, or probably already been an announcement by the time this podcast goes out. Working directly with Liberty Media and F1 to do that. I believe our first guest on that show is going to be Lewis Hamilton. So we have a ton of amazing partnerships rolling out. Just on content, on the distribution side, throughout the last 6 months, we've been proving out podcasting inside Spotify. We've been manually uploading into the platform, again, just to prove the model. Probably less than 1% of our content has been available in Spotify, but it already accounts for 10% of our global listens. That's a new 10% to us as a company. 2 Fridays ago, we finished our API integration with Spotify's back end. All of our content, 100%, within the next 3 weeks will be available into that Spotify platform. And we retain 100% of the InRed advertising revenue on that deal. So huge for us, huge for all of our podcasters, huge for our revenues, but I think also huge for Spotify to go with it. So that's where the money's going. Make more content, acquire more content, sell more advertising.
Yeah. And I said you are looking at growth and you are growing revenues. What, you know, if investors are looking at, say, your final results, you can see that your revenues went up by 260%, but also your, you know, operating loss went up. So you got 5 million rather than 4.8. Are you, yep, you know, looking at becoming, like you did mention, cash flow positive there? When are you looking to target profitability then, Rob?
So for us, it's going to be, we're all saying here, we're looking at the models. It really depends on our pickup over the next, you know, for H2 for us, to effectively by the end of November. But certainly early into the new year, we're going to go cash flow positive on a monthly basis. Mm-hmm. And 2019, we will be EBITDA positive for that year. Like I say, we're going to double revenue this year from last. On the costs, actually, what is interesting, obviously we bought Sonar and that engineering team. Those guys are rolling out that Reddit product, but the AI and the NLP is also there inside that and inside our other products, especially our ad serving. But a lot of those engineers have been working on what we've been doing in terms of automating systems here in the company, especially around our accounts of back end. All of our system used to be manual. That's now automated. So that change, and actually because most of our technology is actually complete at this point, what it's done is actually allowed us to free up a lot of headcount. So we've already identified and have actioned. So by the end of this month, those actions will be done. We've reduced overall cost by $650,000 a year, and we've identified another $350,000 a year of reallocated headcount. So we're losing certain skills, but we're employing skills into sales and content creation in New York and London, which again will accelerate what we do in terms of making content and selling advertising. So all of those things coming together, really important. Reduce costs, make more revenue. But also, it's about the margin. So again, our focus on creating our own content.
Yeah,
we have cost of production there, but as you know from making a podcast, it's you've got your own time. It's a relatively cheap thing to do. We reckon between $300 and $500 an episode to make a decent podcast. But then we're retaining 100% of the revenue. So, you know, we're looking at, instead of, 30, 35% gross margin on our third-party content, we're looking at 50 or 60% GM on our own content. So our job over the rest of this year at 319 is, in terms of our sales mix, get a higher percentage of our overall revenues running through our own content so we can improve our overall gross margin. So reduce costs, improve gross margin, and also with our own content, it's our IP. It doesn't churn. It can't go to another network. We're not paying minimum guarantees and upfronts. That's our IP moving forward for us as a company.
Yeah. And it's, it's still a very hot space. You see, more people sort of creating podcasts all the time. But does that, are you worried that to a certain extent, because it's so hot, it becomes more competitive for you, or is it getting harder or not?
Well, I mean, again, that's, the key thing for us in terms of our sales mix. Mm. We quite rightly will step back into the market aggressively over the next 6 months and bring on probably 7 to 10 tier one, very top end tier two podcasts. So that's 300,000-400,000 listens an episode podcast. Mm-hmm. Because we know what our sell-through rate is for advertising. We know what our CPM is. So again, we can instantly add revenue back into this company, but at relatively low margins, 30, 35%. But we can use that volume of listens as we create more of our own content to promote our own content, drive that up to 200,000 or 300,000 listens an episode quickly. And then we're retaining 60% gross margin instead of 30 or 40. I mean, we've seen, Mafia's already at a couple of 100,000 listens an episode. I think we're episode 12 or 13 now. Covert launched 4 weeks ago. Within 2 weeks, was number two in the iTunes global top 10 podcast lists. And that's all being done because we can leverage our network to promote our own content, retain more revenue at a higher margin.
Yeah.
So it is getting hotter without any doubt at all. I think we have the right strategy around our own content, and we have quality partners like Formula One, A&E, the guys at World Media Rights. We've got quality content partners where we're the producer, we're the co-producer, and we retain the margin on that.
Yeah. Okay. So in a word, I mean, obviously the acquisition didn't go ahead, but are you still quite bullish on your strategy now?
Our strategy has been right for the last year, without any doubt at all. Our model has been right for the last year. I think if the acquisition had happened, great, we could have made that work and we would have been a bigger, huge EBITDA company. They tell me people may like all of that and whatnot. So that would have been good. I think for us as a company, with what we do, our strategy and our model, in a sector in podcasting that's exploding right now, and with our content partners and our content strategy, many investors have said to me, actually, we're not that sad. It didn't go through with Triton, because actually, you guys were the sizzle in that particular sausage, and you guys were being massively undersold. So, we invested in Audio Boom, we're happy to stay with, and the vast number of our existing shareholders all invested into our latest funding round. So they get what we're doing, they get where we're going, and the growth is real. It's you can see it on all of our KPIs, not just in revenues, and our model is absolutely set now. Our only issue is just cookie cuttering the model and just rolling it out as quickly as possible.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, Rob, well, if anyone's listening to this and likes the sound of what you're doing and not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, podcasting and audio on demand is the fastest growing digital tech sector there is right now. We are right in the middle of that mix, both in the UK and more importantly in the US, where this market is just absolutely exploding. Mm. Our technology is pretty much finished, and we're just, you know, we keep it new and fresh. But all of that serious sunk cost in creating platform is done, and it's scalable. So we don't need to keep pumping more and more development headcount at that, so we can control costs. And in terms of our content and our content roster and the partners we're working with, we believe we're working with the right partners coming out of the right sectors that will produce hit after hit after hit in podcasting. And we retain huge margin on that content. So I think we've got all the bits right. I think we've just got to turn the handle down and just keep our foot on the pedal.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous. Rob, good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Perfect. Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. You all right, Chris?
Hello, Justin. Yes, very well. Thank you. Very well.
Cool. Now, before we go into some stocks that you've been looking at results out of bigger companies, I want to ask your opinion, because I see it very often, and I think it's like clickbait, really. I see sort of publications who write blogs on bigger cap stocks talking about dividend cuts in very popular bigger stocks. And I've seen it on Royal Dutch Shell, I've seen it on Sky, and I've been aware of these because I've held stocks at the time, and they didn't come to fruition. And I'm recently seeing it on BT, which I hold. They say, oh, a new boss is coming in, he'll probably cut the dividend straight away. And I think a lot of it is just clickbait because, you know, they don't come to fruition, but they know they're preying on sort of investors' little worries and fears a little bit, you know. But I think sometimes it's not a bad thing. I think it may take a little knock in the shape, right? if they do it, but BT's got a bit of debt there, you know, so it would help, you know, clear a bit of that, wouldn't it? You know?
Absolutely. Look, it certainly is clickbait. There's no doubt about that. Bad news always induces people to look at something as opposed to desperately in line comments or something like that. The reality is, though, look, with dividends, you've got to always look at the underlying realities. You know, a company, a dividend is something which, because it's a payment to shareholders, it does have a real value. And a lot of people do hold shares because of the dividends that they're paying. So company directors are typically loath to cut dividends, or at least to move the sort of the trend that they're doing, because they know it will have an impact potentially on the share price. So obviously you can get themselves in a situation where they can't afford it anymore, and that's what you've got to appraise. So my view would be there's always loads of options. Take Shell, for example, Royal Dutch Shell. You know, it was under huge pressure 2-3 years ago. What they did was they offered a scrip dividend. That means that you could take your dividend in shares and not in cash. Mm-hmm. That would have worked out quite well. They also cut costs. And, you know, when I look at BT today, they're in exactly the same situation. They are cutting costs. They may well offer a scrip dividend. They may even sell some divisions. You know, there are other options that are open to them. I tell you what's interesting about BT, though, is that for me, it's all about the chairman. Now, the chairman is a guy who's previously was at Rio Tinto. Mm-hmm. And Rio Tinto had a huge issue as well. This is after the global financial crisis. Commodity prices went down and all of that sort of stuff. What did he do? What he did was he did a cost cutting. He changed the chief executive. And actually what he presided over was actually a massive rise in the dividend over the last few years. So I think he's got form for kind of doing some of the things you're seeing, changing the CEO, cost cutting. But on the dividend, I'm afraid, you know, it's still unclear. My feeling is they may well keep it, but they may well offer a scrip dividend option, and they may well start to divest some of the other part of the business.
You're right about the chairman coming in there, and do you know what was quite telling? Yesterday, I mean, he's bought a big chunk, I can't remember how much it was, but yesterday, his wife bought £204,000 worth of shares at £2.04. So, and I don't care what well off you are, £204,000 is quite a big chunk of money, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, that's right. No, it's as Peter Lynch of One Up on Wall Street fame, you know, said, forget direct buyers and sells or related parties buyers and sells. The only thing that matters is buying shares with cold, hard cash. Mm-hmm. And I totally agree. And, you know, it's always an interesting sum when somebody does that. Obviously, the more material the sum, the better. But there you go. You know, you can always take a positive from that, even if it is something which maybe has as much PR value as it does, you know, financial impact.
Okay, you're right there. PR value. They must be thinking, okay, listen, we have to make a substantial purchase to show we're serious. But, you know, how much is that? And $10,000, $100,000. Which figure did they come to, I wonder? I wonder what, when they realise £200,000 should do it. Because, you know, it's not the first of his purchases or related purchases. So it's quite interesting to see. I mean, it's a fair chunk of cash. I mean, it shows to me that, you know, no one likes to lose money, but it does show to me to put that kind of cash into the company shows that he has pretty much confidence that the company is lowly valued at the moment. So and he hopes to see a turnaround, which is happening. You know, the CEO is going, 13,000 people are going, so there's a big change there. Okay, well, anyway, let's go on to some news. Chris, of stocks out today, what are you looking at?
Yeah, well, let's carry on the theme, unfortunately, of job cuts and Rolls-Royce. I mean, Rolls-Royce, not the cars, Rolls-Royce as in the aircraft engines, the defence company and related. Yeah. They announced 4,600 job cuts formally this morning. It's been circulating in the press for a while. And you know, what's their rationale? The rationale is they want to improve margins, they want to focus the business, they want to make sure that they generate the sort of cash flows that they've told shareholders that they should be generating. So, you know, very sad news clearly for anybody impacted. But, you know, businesses have to be run. Unfortunately, that's the harsh reality of life. And what's interesting to me is that how the shares have reacted. You know, unlike BT, where the shares went down after the cost cutting, which I think was a bit rude, Rolls-Royce shares are up a couple of percent when I last looked this morning, on the basis that the company's doing the sort of things which shareholders and analysts like the sound of. And I think it makes a bit of sense for them. Rolls-Royce have got a great engine business. It's a long-term engine business. It's got long-term cash flows, but in order to get there, you've got to make sure your company's in a decent situation. They've had a troubled few years, just, you know, missing the boat on a couple of things, having a few challenges and problems. I think this is the reaction of the CEO, of the still newish CEO, to those issues.
Yeah. And it's funny. Do you know what? It's not funny at all, in an odd way, but there's excellent sort of support level, £8 there. It's bounced down towards it. You won't buy it at £8. You need to buy a bit higher if you're lucky. But it spiked down to that sort of intraday, you know, and bounced straight back up. And so you could say, maybe it's safe then. If it breaks down below that, then maybe they're in a bit of trouble. But it's holding that level quite nicely, you know.
That's right.
Cool.
Yeah, I've always thought Rolls-Royce is a £10 plus share. I mean, it's got, as I say, got some nice long-term positions. I've always thought it's sort of a 10, 12 quid share if the stars align. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, okay, cool. What's next, Chris?
So going from aircraft engines and the like to fake tan, let's have a quick look at PZ Cousins.
I suppose air hostesses, I suppose air hostesses and all that, they're a crossover there, aren't they? So Rolls-Royce, you've got they wear a lot of fake tan, I find. Unbelievable amount. Well, so I just think Rolls-Royce I was just trying to find some kind of link between Rolls-Royce and...
The segue Justin was inspired.
It was clumsy, I know that. anyway, go for it.
But PZ Cousins, actually, they do, they've got a couple of big soap brands as well, Imperial Leather and Cousins, you no doubt would have heard of. Yep. Look, it's a sort of a branded company which has attracted a pretty high rating over the last few years. It's slightly fallen off the rails recently, though. For two reasons. Number one is we all know the consumer environment is not easy in the UK, and you know there's been a bit of down trading and that's impacted them a little bit. The second aspect is the company's got a big market position in Africa, specifically Nigeria, which, you know, in the good old days was a great positive because, you know, Nigeria remains a massive potential growth story, a huge population, etc., etc. But short term, there's been a few economic challenges there, and that's impacted their sales and trading as well. So the combination of those two, they had a little bit of a whoopsie 3 months ago. The shares have rallied off that level, but have fallen back down to the levels that they were at about 3 months ago today, when they sort of said, look, UK still mixed, Africa, Nigeria still tough, but the Saint-Tropez tan sales and the beauty division remain strong. So there's a bit of something for everyone, but at least if the sun continues to shine, this one might start to recover. For what it's worth, at these sorts of levels, you know, around about 220 pence a share, I actually think it does exhibit good value. As I say, it did bounce off the levels 3 months ago after the original whoopsie, did rally sort of 40, 50 pence, but it's lost all of that in the last few weeks. So these are big levels, no doubt, but I actually think this is an interesting company, a little bit of dividend yield on offer, some good brands, and you never know.
Yeah, well, you know, my wife, for the first time in 10 years, apparently bought some more Saint-Tropez the other day. Don't know why. But and apparently, I didn't even remember this. I bought her first bottle of Saint-Tropez. So she's hardly a regular customer, but at least she is a customer. Anyway, what's next, Chris?
There you go. That's very, very good. Final one has to be still in the retail zone, and that's Majestic Wines with the wonderful ticker WINE. What's kind of interesting there is the retail trend. We all see Majestic Wines in our high streets, in our shopping centres or whatever. That is not anymore the growth part of the business. Sure, sales there went slightly up in the period just talked about, but it's the Naked Wines, wonderfully named, Naked Wines division, the online division, where profits have gone up 6 times, and that's clearly increasingly the thrust of their business. So again, it's an indication that if you're buying retailers, then for goodness sake, check out if they've got a good online capability. If they don't, then they may well be troubled. And as I say, Majestic Wines, it's probably, you know, most aficionados or people on the street would regard it as, you know, a very solid player in terms of its range selection, knowledgeability and all of that stuff. But even they were struggling with their retail sites. It really is this Naked Wines business which has got them out of a bit of a hole and is clearly going to be the focus of the business going forward.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Wine. I mean, just look at the chart there. Hang on a sec. But, yeah, it's not bad. It's quite a strong looking chart. Like you say, I was surprised that, you know, it's half decent because I'm just thinking, really, with all the competition out there at the moment, everywhere is just hard, isn't it? But like you said, they are the go to place for, you know, wines. But £4.80, look at that over the last, where is it? It's since 2015. Literally. Has had 3 major spikes at £4.80, so it's going to need to go some to get through that because that is major resistance. So at the moment at £4.43, who knows? It's close to it, but let's see if we go through it. But there we are.
Yeah, that's right. But the thing is, though, to show the difference, I mean, 5 years ago the shares were £5.50 plus. Mm-hmm. So as you can see, it's spent the last 5 years going sideways to down. And, you know, that, as I say, is the absorption factor around the Majestic Wines retail estate as we see them, you know, struggling progressively as people started to think about different ways to buy their wine or something. But as I say, it seems to me they've passed the flickover point, and the Naked Wines business now, I think, progressively will drive it going forward. So, you know, perhaps better days for them. Perhaps they're cracking open a bottle in the board. Room. Who knows?
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Chris, thanks for that, and we'll speak next week, fella.
Sounds a plan. See you soon.
Okay, it's time for the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Expediator, that's XPD. At 4, Landor Resources, LND. At 3, ARC Minerals, ARCM. At 2, SDX Energy, SDX ticker. And at number 1, TERN. That's been a bit of a roller coaster ride this week. A lot of hype, a lot of buying, a lot of dumping, and I think now people are in for what? Buying again? So it went up from. Where'd it go from? Actually, this week went from 27 pence. It doubled pretty much, 60 pence there. Came back then as a 27 pence. Wow. Okay, top 5 most liked RNSs. They are as follows. At 5, ImmuPharma, IMM, results of CIP preclinical data. At 4, Rehobold Resources, RBD, acquisition of Gaelic Resources and notice of GM. At 3, Valerix, VAL 401 update, that's VAL. Oh, VAL. At 2, Motive Bio, MTFB, Motive Bio submits NDA for Iclaprim to the FDA. NDA to the FDA, MTFB. Number 1, most liked RNS. Excellent bit of news here. Asia Met Resources, Arse, Insects, 456 metres of copper mineralisation at Butong. And that was the end of the drill. They've had to pull out the drill and get a bigger drill. And so this will expand the resource of Butong, which is very big anyway. And I think this now means it's, you know, could be up for sale, you know, to the big guys, Anglo and all those kind of people, any Wood Mackenzie, all these big copper producers will be looking out at this thinking, wow, that is amazing. So interesting times come. And the share price went down a little bit. I don't understand that. I don't think people understand that the significance of having this much copper in a world where copper is going to supply deficit in the next 5-10 years. Anyway, that'll be rate, I think, on that. Or it should go up. Listen, it's not investment advice, but worth keeping an eye on. I think that's an amazing result there. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.